and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The Department of Environment has approved the environmental impact assessment for the contentious Penang South Island's reclamation project. This is subject, however, to 71 conditions, and these conditions include the implementation of a social impact management plan and an ecology offset master plan. Now, will this conditional approval be a satisfactory concession to allay objections from the fishing community and environmentalists? Joining me on the show now is Mina Rahman. She's the president of Sahabat Alam Malaysia. Mina, can you start our conversation today by maybe briefly helping us understand the current situation? What exactly are environmentalists concerned about when it comes to this approval, this conditional approval from the environment, the Department of Environment over the environmental assessment, impact assessment?
Thank you, Melissa. I think first we need to understand the scale of the project. Yeah, we are talking about 4,500 acres. And for a lot of people, they don't understand what 4,500 acres mean. And just let's put that into perspective. We're talking about roughly, you know, we know that a football field is like 1.3 acres. So imagine 4,500 football fields in the sea. And this is the scale we're talking about at the south of the Penang Island, from Tanjung Teluk Tempoyap to Tanjung Gertak Sanggol. Now, a lot of controversy has arisen, but let me just share with you what the Department of Environment Director General himself said, the former Director General, when he approved a previous EIA, and which was then challenged. Now, this is what they had to say, that the project itself will cause irreversible damage and residual impact on the mudflat ecosystems, on the fishing grounds, on the turtle landing, and part of the coral reefs at Pulau Rimau. And this is, they go on to say this, it is an important ecosystem to the fishery resource. This is irreversible damage. I'm not saying it, the Department of Environment said it, that this is irreversible damage. It will cause significant negative impacts to the fishery resources, to the fishers, and would threaten the country's food security. Now, Melissa, this is the Department of Environment Director General saying it. So this is what the DOE itself has admitted. And this admission by the Department of Environment is enough justification for the project not to proceed. And just some other major highlights, you know, for the people who do not know. Now, for those of you who are very concerned about the environment, the environmental damage is quite significant. And of course, it's this area is an environmentally sensitive area. That's not disputed. The environmental impact assessment says it. The Department of Environment says it. And, you know, they have turtle landing sites and nesting grounds, the Olive Ridley turtle, the green turtle, and so on and so forth. I mean, Malaysia is committed to the Convention on Biological Diversity. So we are talking about the destruction of very important biodiversity areas. And I can go on. I have a few more things to say.
But, sure. I might just jump in here, Mina, and ask you, the fact that the EIA was given an approval, a conditional approval, there were 71 conditions. First of all, do we know what these conditions are? And does the fact that that this was a conditional approval, will that assuage some of the public concern over this project? The fact that, well, actually, approval is only conditional based on fulfilling these 71 conditions.
No, this is the real problem. I mean, first, it will not assuage the public concerns. Well, particularly the fisher folk. As you know, there are the Penang Fishermen's Association, which is the state's Fishermen's Association, representing over 6,000 fishermen. They have objected to this. Many civil society groups, you know, we are always called anti-development. This is not about anti-development. This is about a destruction of very environmentally sensitive areas. And we also question the justification for the project. So the issue really is for the project not to proceed. So when you look at the conditions is all about mitigation. That means you proceed, but you do this and you do that, you know. And so that doesn't assuage those of us who have read the report, and we are not just simply busybodies or nobodies. We have studied this, we have gone through it. And so those of us, those, you know, we have some propaganda going on in the state, classifying all of us as anti-development. We are not anti-development. We basically think that there are fundamental concerns. And as I have said, wild sacrifice, very important ecosystem for a project that, you know, if you talk about expansion for jobs in that the Banandha Pass industrial area, you can go to the mainland. The Penang Island, you know, is not an island. It comprises of Penang Island and Seberang Perai. The way they argue this case is as if Penang Island is limited land and it's only the island. Now, we are not Singapore. So we need to realize that. And the other thing is, it's often associated with the funding of the Penang Transport Master Plan. But if you look at the environmental impact assessment itself, it doesn't link to the funding for the Penang Transport Master Plan. So that has been delinked, and we need to understand that. So there's a lot of misconception that goes on. So another aspect, I think this is very critical, Melissa, if I may, the conditions. Although it's conditional, much of these conditions are like, you know, having an offset program. Now, what's an offset program? An offset program is, oh, I can destroy this area, but I will offset by this. For instance, they say we can have artificial coral reefs, or we can have fish aggregating devices. I mean, all this is after you destroy very pristine habitats, which are source grounds for fisheries. And then you talk about mitigation and offsets, which will never, ever replace the complex ecosystems of that area, the mudflats, the turtle landing sites, the coral reefs. They're all interconnected. You can't look at them piecemeal. What the EIA and the state government has basically done, they call it a trade-off. This is not a trade-off. It's a write-off. It basically means, sorry, this is, they don't even say sorry, by the way. This is gone. This is gone. And we can just do, you know, some piecemeal issue, you know, measures, floating, you know, curtains in the sea and so on. And a final point I would raise, just very critical, the EIA does not sufficiently consider the amount of sand that is needed for the reclamation. Now, Melissa, we are talking about 190 million cubic meters of sand, which will be mined from several locations off the coast of Perak and Penang. Now, basically, let me put it in perspective. 75,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools of sand. The total area from where the sand is sourced from multiple places, three times the size of Penang Island. Now, can you imagine 75,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools of sand on land? If it's on land, we can see it, we can understand it, and we can understand the scale of what we're talking about. This is underwater. Mm-hmm. We will not see. So you're talking about, and the EIA doesn't deal with this in detail because the way they have looked at it is, oh, the reclamation is one aspect, the sand mining is another aspect. And what we are saying is, you have to look at the total cumulative effects, and this is ignored.
Quick question. So the state government has said, Penang government has said that, you know, the project will start towards the end of the year, third quarter towards the end of the year. Does that mean that the project cannot proceed until all the legal avenues have been exhausted?
Well, that is the position that we will take. But what's really clear is that what we have to explain is that the environmental management plan needs to be approved by the Department of Environment. So if the Department of Environment is not happy with the environmental management plan, now that EMP, as they call it, is not subject to public consultation or public review. So we won't know what happens. It's all happening behind the scenes. So you have 71 conditions. The Department of Environment is supposed to monitor and, you know, look at what's being complied with. The environmental management plan will be looked at. So we don't know what they're going to look at because we have no information on that. So this is really not transparent in terms of the EMP. So for the Chief Minister of Penang to say that they're going to start the works Now, he did say that it will be subject to the approval of the EMP. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. So in the appeal, we will raise these issues, and we'll have to see. One of the things that we have done is also to ask for the disclosure of the full EIA. Now, the Penang Chief Minister said you go to the website, you know, he gave us a link. We all went to the website. We couldn't even download the EIA. We don't know what the DOE decision is. We don't know the 71 conditions. So this is what, you know, how can you call this, inclusive and transparent? This is really not inclusive, nor is it transparent.
Mina, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I appreciate your time. Mina Rahman from Sabah Alam Malaysia. We're going to take a quick break on Consider This. We'll be back with more on this topic. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our conversation about the Penang South Island's reclamation project. It's a contentious project. It has recently received conditional approval from the Department of Environment. Joining us on the line now, we have Khoo Salman Nasution. She's the Vice President of Penang Heritage Trust. Salman, thank you for joining me on the show today. Let's begin very quickly with some of your concerns about the approval that was granted for the environmental assessment, impact assessment for the Penang South Islands.
So the area of Telok Kumbar, or the Bay of Kumbar, is the place where the Chinese call Meihu, or beautiful lake, because the sea here is so calm, it's sheltered by the two lakes of the turtle-shaped island, you know. So this is an important recreational beach for locals and domestic tourists, especially since the famous Batu Feringgi has already been destroyed by erosion, which some say is linked to the recent reclamations in the North Coast. So yes, I have many concerns that DOE has just approved a project which will destroy this environmentally sensitive area. It's, you know, sea with coral and beaches with turtle landing sites. So we are supposed to embark on a development project which may drag on for several decades or may be abandoned like the reclamations in Malacca, which, you know, now they're trying to salvage it again. Now, the world economic outlook is uncertain, to say the least. The price of fuel, food is unstable. The project is economically risky. And even if it's completed, the project is almost guaranteed to widen the gap between rich and poor and also create social tensions.
Right. Well, you know, some of the proponents of this project, they argue for it, saying that it will bring new jobs, it will bring economic gains to Penangites. And, you know, they say, well, whatever is lost, the trade-off that is lost from the fishing community, this project stands to create more value, more economic gain for the island. How do you respond to those arguments?
Well, I think the value of the fisheries has been understated. In 2021, the wild caught fisheries in Penang was valued at 525 million a year, and aquaculture was valued at another 1.67 billion ringgit, and that's just for Penang. But this reclamation, the quarrying, the sand mining will affect Penang and Northern Perak. Places like Sungai Udang in Penang, Kuala Seputang and Segari in Perak, which are producing, you know, all these areas combined are producing half the brackish aquaculture food production for Peninsular Malaysia. And I think national food security is pretty important, don't you think? And as for jobs, there's already an artificial island just completed in the north of Penang Island. I don't see many thousands of locals being employed there. Instead, mainly foreign workers were brought in to do the reclamation and construction work. As for Island A, with about 800 acres for industrial land, to be frank, you're not going to get the high-tech silicon, you know, wafer manufacturing companies, because the sand is still settling on the artificial island, it's surrounded by sea, and somehow it's sensitive to the vibrations because it's very near the Penang Airport. And those kinds of factories are more likely to go to Kulim High-Tech Park, which has plentiful supply of water. So Island B of the three islands will be covered with high-rise condos, very much like Forest City. So we are the smallest state in Malaysia with the second largest property, you know, the second highest property overhang of more than 5,000 units. So that might even double once, you know, the condos in the Northern Reclaimed Island are developed.
Okay. So how do you characterize the approach that the Penang state government has towards development for the state? I'm curious because if the narrative for the Penang South Islands is to create jobs, to create employment, to create economic gain, how then would you characterize what the vision is for the state? And I'm quite curious because I'm wondering, do you have an alternative vision for development at the state? Is there a way to marry the two or to reach some kind of middle ground or compromise?
Well, for the last 10 years, the Penang government can only talk about the Penang Transport Master Plan. This was actually initiated by the civil society because we wanted to improve public transport. But when the request for proposal was called, there was what I feel is like a bait and switch, because it was a completely different kind of Penang Transport Master Plan, which was full of, you know, mega projects, highway, LRT, and so forth, not improving buses and public transport. So now people have been given the impression that the Penang South Reclamation is really necessary to fund the Penang Transport Master Plan. But already in 2019, there is no mention of reclamation funding the Penang Transport Master Plan in the EIA, in the 2019 EIA. And yet the Penang government has not come up. And the newspapers keep mentioning it, you know, at the end of every article, that is the objective of the Penang South Reclamation. So when the Property Developer Consortium was awarded the project for the Penang Transport Master Plan in 2015, they were supposed to be the project delivery partner, getting a 6% fee for all the components. Now the developer is in the driver's seat, with the government only owning 30% of the project. So with the first phase, you know, Island A, the Penang government will only get 660 million. And after reclaiming three islands, I think they won't even get five billion. Okay, so that won't be able to pay for even one LRT, because one LRT costs 10 billion ringgit. So how can it fund the 46 billion ringgit transport Penang Transport Master Plan? Secondly, this is not the state's first land reclamation swap deal, because the well-known Terowong case also involves payment for transport infrastructure projects with reclamation land. So just for comparison, the allocation of 110 acres out of Gurney Wharf and the Sri Tanjung Pinang reclamation, which also did not cost the Penang state government a cent, so to speak, was apparently enough to raise 6.3 billion for the construction of three highways and a tunnel. So why do we need to allocate 4,500 acres of reclamation just to raise 4 or 5 billion, which is anyhow not even enough to pay for one LRT costing 10 billion ringgit? So it's clear that someone has not done their homework. Okay, the DOE has not required the project proponent to write a strategic EIA, which means that you have to consider alternative scenarios in elaborate detail. In fact, there is no proper cost-benefit analysis whatsoever in the EIA. So what if there's no Penang self-reclamation? What is the worst thing that could happen? Okay, what if this supposedly utopian 4,500 development were to be located in an old oil palm plantation in Seberang Perai, for example? Because it's not true that Penang has no land. Seberang Perai is larger than Singapore. And according to the chief minister in State Assembly recently, 12,000 hectares of industrial land have already been earmarked in Seberang Perai. So wouldn't it be a win-win situation to build this futuristic dream town in Seberang Perai? Because it would bring development and jobs to people who are living there, not just Penang people, but even, you know, people in the neighboring states, and prosper thy neighbor, you know? And because we are expecting for them to give us water. So why not we make jobs more accessible when there is in need of, you know, labor and talent?
All right. Okay. Well, Selma, you mentioned a couple of the misconceptions surrounding the Penang South Islands. I'm quite curious about where the communication has broken. What is public reception to the island? How would you characterize the on-the-ground response? Because I'm wondering, is this receiving a lot of public support, or is it just the few who are vocal that object to this?
Okay, well, I think the average Penangite may not care where his or her seafood comes from until it's gone, but it's going to have a knockdown effect on the hawkers, on the restaurants, on the makcik, you know, who sell economy rice in the gerai. It's going to have a knockdown effect on the ecotourism and the tourism industry generally, because we are a foodie destination. So, you know, most people will just look at the pretty pictures and say, oh, that's good, you know, but will they be able to afford to buy homes there? Because the population projection for Penang South Reclamation is 446,000 people in 10 or 20 years' time. But is that realistic? And in Forest City, we know that more than 90% of the properties were purchased by foreigners. So do you think that the same thing will be repeated here? Now, fishermen come from all over Penang, from the south, from the north, from Seberang Parai. They come here to this area to fish. There are fishing boats from Perak Coast, from Kedah, and even Perlis. So if you dump sand into their rice bowl, do you think they will be happy? And the foreign workers for the three islands also need somewhere to stay. So there is a plan to construct a centralized labor quarters for 44,000 people in Telok Kumbar, where the local population is 15,000 people. So the foreign workers will be three times the number of local workers. And will that create social tensions?
Do you think, Salma, that this might be a contentious issue in the upcoming state election?
Okay, if you want me to talk about that, the DAP seats are not really affected. It's the PKR seats that are affected. So, you know, the PKR seats are the ones in the south, Amanah as well. And as you know, that there is a swing to PN in Malay majority seats. But DAP seats, I think, quite safe. Well, so, you know, what do you think? You know, this is a coalition. They have to work together. And I just want to mention that, you know, there is the state government has commissioned a social impact assessment where they say that out of the 700 people interviewed, more than 80% are happy with the PSR. But actually, nobody has seen it. I've never seen that social impact assessment, and it should, maybe you can get a copy, you know, and then look at it, because we also want to get a copy. So, you know, the 1,500 affected fishermen, they have families, many of them are B40. Yes, some might be afford, maybe offered a gratuity of 20,000, maybe even a bit more, some, but not all. And how long do you think that some will last? One or 2 years? The government wants to offer some of them a boat to go out further into the sea. But the full-time fishermen already have boats. Those who don't have boats are usually the part-time fishermen. I wonder if the government has been offering boats to the part-time fishermen as well. Well, the full-time fishermen say, if you destroy the spawning grounds, there won't be much fish, even if you go further out. And I've heard even the trawler people saying this as well, and they are fishing much further out. Now, the Penang government has given boats to a few fishermen and one fisherwoman 2 days before GE15. But I see it's always the same few fisherpersons who are benefiting from the state largesse. None of them are elected committee members of the Persatuan Nelayan Pulau Pinang, which is actually constituted under Akta Persatuan Nelayan 1971.
Thanks so much for speaking with me. That was Ku Salma Nasution, Vice President of the Penang Heritage Trust. Joining me on the line now to give the perspective of the state government, I have Zairil Kiljohari. He is the Penang State Exco for Infrastructure and Transport. Zairil, thank you for your time. The official narrative for the Penang South Islands project, it seems to have shifted from raising funds for the transport, the transport master plan, to now what critics are saying has turned into a land bank exercise, expansion exercise. How would you respond to those claims?
I would respond by saying a land bank expansion exercise is precisely what Penang needs, bearing in mind that we are in an island state. And the state also, unlike maybe many other states in the country, we're not blessed with a lot of land, abundant land. And at the same time, the state owns very little land. This is also due to the sort of colonial heritage that we have. The state government has ended up not owning a huge source of land compared to many other states. Okay. So we don't actually have that much land. And at the same time, we require to keep Penang going and to keep creating new jobs for Penangites, we need lots of land to industrialize. We need to expand our industrial parks. And hence, you know, since we are unable to cut our hills, the next best thing, just like every other island nation in the world, Singapore and everywhere else, reclamation is, of course, the natural thing to do.
Zairil, sorry, just to interject, but Penang is not just an island state. or an island state. That's the mainland. There's lots of land on the mainland, Seberang Perai. Why aren't you looking at Seberang to expand your land bank?
In fact, we have expanded hugely into Seberang Perai. If you go to Batu Kawan today, it's already saturated. We are trying very hard to open more land as possible. But the state, again, does not own much land, even in Seberang Perai. We have to go through acquisition processes, which we are. And in some cases, we actually encounter legal difficulties as well. There is one huge corporation, for example, suing us in court over land acquisition, which we are doing to expand industrial land as well. And we are, in fact, also at the same time encouraging private industrial lands to open up. Bear in mind, again, that on Seberang Perai, most land are privately owned and it does not belong to the state. And Seberang Perai is also actually already quite developed. There is not that much also land, new land that can be readily or easily available for industrial expansion.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, so how would the Penang government respond then to all the opposition, years long of opposition from environmentalists, from fisher folk, from the public to this project? It's so contentious, especially now that we have in just a couple of months the state election. Will there be an impact to maybe not DAP seats, but to your partners in the coalition, PKR seats?
I think we really have to take a larger perspective on this. The fact is that, you know, even what we deem as heritage today in Georgetown, much of it was reclaimed even during the British era. So Penang has been expanding. The original island is nothing as what it originally was, and has been expanding and reclaiming for hundreds of years. The larger picture, of course, is that the economy is all important for Penang. We're a state that is an industrial state. We contribute, a huge surplus to Malaysia's balance of trade. You know, our contribution to the manufacturing economy is like 30-40% of the nation. We have to keep going. We have to keep developing. The question is to mitigate any impact and harm that comes from development, and that's what we're trying to do. The PSI, or the Penang South Islands, will be developed according to the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's framework. It will be a climate adaptation program. There will be mitigation measures, ecology offset programs. All the concerns of the fishermen, for example, are taken care of. Hence, according to our social impact analysis, which is we had to do as part of the whole approval process, 75% of fishermen actually agree with the project. And we also had to go undergo a whole public display, I think quite numerous times as well, because we have submitted EIAs quite a number of times. And every time we get more than 90% response, which is
okay.
And supportive of the project.
So why do the criticisms and the objections continue then, Zariel? If you say you have all this support, then where is the breakdown in communication? Has there been engagement to the people who are protesting this?
Not at all. There's no breakdown of communication. Every project, as I think you can appreciate, there will always be criticism. The same groups that criticize and are protesting against the reclamation today are the same groups that also protested against the first bridge, the second bridge, the Escape Theme Park, the Spice Convention Center. I recall, very vividly, they said the Spice Convention Center would be a white elephant, no one would use it. But as you know, today, it is fully booked all year long. And because we have the Spice Convention Center, a world-class convention center, we are able to host international events. Last year, we had the WCIT 2023. This would not have been possible if we did not have such a venue. Criticism is fine, and it's part and parcel of democracy. I think the question is whether criticism is relevant or they are unfounded. Again, as I said, these same groups have basically objected and protested against almost every development in Penang. And were we to, you know, listen to them blindly, then we wouldn't even have the two bridges that we have today. So I think we have to be, we listen to good criticism, constructive ones, And we take into account the concerns, the relevant concerns of all stakeholders. But at the same time, we do not stop development just because there are a few loud voices.
Zahril, thank you for speaking with me. That was Penang Exco member in charge of transport and infrastructure, Zahril K. Johari Heat. That wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.